row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch and row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rains come and tumble them down.
Welcome to Digging In with Master Gardeners, a production of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. We are Teresa Golden and Jean Thomas, Master Gardener volunteers. We discuss gardening issues seasonally and describe the events and educational services we provide. The seasoning segments appear on a timely basis, according to what's happening in our gardens during the year. Outstanding in their field segments are an opportunity to introduce our most outstanding volunteers individually. Cross-pollinating stories will discuss the activities of master gardeners in additional roles. We have master foresters and master naturalists included in our membership, as well as master beekeepers. We even have brewmasters. There are other offerings available from Cooperative Extension, and we will periodically be chatting with representatives of the busy 4-H program and the Taste of New York market, as well as the various offerings for assistance with family life, from childcare to budget planning. From time to time, we will go live for a call-in show when a particularly urgent topic arises. The podcast of Digging In with Master Gardeners is available through this station and via a link on our own website at ccecolumbiagreen.org/gardening.
Welcome to Digging In with Master Gardeners, a program from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Teresa Golden, and with me is Jean Thomas. With two of the Master Gardener volunteers that help to educate Twin County residents on a variety of community horticultural topics. Thank you for joining us today. The topic for this segment is garden design. With us for this discussion is Joan Satterley, another one of our Master Gardener volunteers. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you for having me here.
Let's start by getting to know you a little bit. How long have you been a Master Gardener, and what prompted your interest in this program and in garden design?
I've been a Master Gardener about 22 years now, and along with being a Master Gardener and going through that training, with the Federated Garden Clubs of New York State, I received a certificate as a landscape design consultant. And I did both of those things because after living at my property for 25 years, I knew there were better ways of doing a garden than what I was doing. So I decided to get some professional help and maybe at the same time be able to help other people.
I've seen your property, Joan. It's a challenge. It's mostly vertical, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But by having the property, which is like on a downward slope, you don't have to decide where you're going to put your garden rooms or what you're going to do. You're told what to do by the land. So that actually makes it easier.
Okay, so let's dig in further. Most listeners already have a garden and would like to improve it along that line. Others may be starting from scratch. With that in mind, how do you define garden design, and why should we care?
Garden design is a very personal thing. I personally don't think a garden is really ever done. It's always, well, next week the roses are going to be here, or you should have seen it last week. So there's a lot of work to a garden. And yes, most of the people that are listening today probably already have a garden. But that doesn't mean that you cannot rethink your garden and come up with some good ideas. I think one of the most important things, whether your garden is in existence or whether you're just starting a new garden, is maintenance. How much time do you want to spend on your garden? What do you want your garden to give to you? It can be both time and cost. If you can find someone to work for you, you can have help. You also have to consider your soil. Where I live, a lot of people are always complaining that they have clay, and I have just nothing but shale, and we use a pickaxe to do our gardening. So you do have to consider maintenance, soil, the availability of water in your garden. My garden personally is mostly plants that don't need a lot of water. You have to think of the climate and the zones. And in your garden, you will have a number of different, well, maybe not a number, but a couple of different climates where you can plant plants that need a warmer area or plants that will take the cold. One of the important things about setting up a garden is your garden style. We have adapted in the United States pretty much the English style of gardening. Have plants bloom from the beginning of the beginning of the year to the end of the year. In England, we have a very different climate here than in England, so that is a difficult. You can have a garden without flowers. You can have a garden that's just a pastoral woodland with benches and simple shrubs. And you should always, especially when you have already established a garden, consider your existing plantings.
So I've got a couple questions. Maintenance. We're always hearing about people who want a nice low-maintenance garden, so they figure if they put in a bunch of perennials and have a nice little pattern design drawn out on a piece of paper that they're successful. What are the odds of that actually happening?
When I first took the Master Gardener class here in Accra, there was a saying, friends, don't let friends plant annuals. And that is not true. It wasn't true then, but it was something that people believed. Having a garden is a very personal thing, and styles come and go. And annuals now are very popular. There are many ways that people tell you can have a low maintenance garden, but gardening does take time and effort. And I'm hesitating here because I really can't come up with something that makes a garden absolutely instantaneously beautiful and low work. You really need to plant the right plant in the right place, which means you don't go to a nursery in the spring and pick out the most beautiful plants, which is what I did for 25 years, and come home and say, okay, where do I put this? You have to really think out things beforehand. You also should research plants. One very handy thing is to bring your telephone along with you. Your iPhone, your cell phone. And you can look up the names, the Latin names of the plants, right, when you're at the nursery. And that way you can pick the correct plant to be planting. And I think having the correct plant in the right place is what makes gardening a little bit less maintenance.
Isn't it also important to have a variety of different types of plants, so like grasses with shrubs?
Yes. That has to go along with things that, after you have your garden designed, what kinds of plants you want. And there are a lot more. Most people go and they look at a flat of plants, be it annuals or perennials, and bring that flat home. They grow maybe ground level, 6 inches, 12 inches, plant those, and they have a garden. But we have to consider that we have native plants, annuals, perennials, bulbs, vines, shrubs, trees, ground covers, ferns, mosses, grasses, and tropicals. So we have a big variety of things that we can plant in our garden. And that's what makes garden design, because you are not just planting, you know, the petunias that you always see or the geraniums. You're getting a wide variety of plants.
So is this where it's kind of important to know what your eco climates are?
Yes,
so if you've got a warmer, safer area to put those tropicals.
Correct, yes, okay. It is.
You mentioned multiple garden styles and talked a bit about the English style. Can you expand a little bit about what the Italian and French styles are like?
The Italian and French styles are more more formal. My next-door neighbor, early on, about 10 years ago, my next-door neighbor, as I might have mentioned before, I have very shale-like property, and next door is the same. And this new people came, and she wanted a beautiful garden. And I said, well, it's been really a lot of work to get this done, but let's talk about what you have here. And I said, and it probably never will look like Versailles. And lo and behold, she is French. Her father was a chef. And there are private events at Versailles. And her father was a chef there. So yes, that was her point of reference, was Versailles. Well, they moved.
How many acres is Versailles?
And there, I have new neighbors now, and they asked me to help them design a garden, and I designed a garden that was appropriate here. And 10 years later, the plants are still thriving and growing, and they're very happy with that. So, what was your question?
I've also heard that there's a cottage style.
I think cottage style probably would be, the English style.
The English garden
on a small scale. If you've seen a lot of pictures of English homes, they have like a little garden in the front of their house, and it's just stock full of plants.
And they often incorporate veggies, right?
Right. Yeah. 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 That's something that's very popular now, and it always could have been that you incorporate vegetables in with your flower garden, and that's,
or vice versa.
Right.
Right. There's a question. Design and vegetable gardens. Now, you're talking about designing a garden as a room. That certainly would apply to a vegetable garden.
Right.
So these basics would apply in your veggie gardening as well, correct?
Certainly, yeah. And really, the basics of design go for anything. It goes for how you set up your living room. Goes how you set up... anything. Design is design, whether you're doing a garden, a vegetable garden, or a flower garden, or whatever.
You're listening to Digging In with Master Gardeners, a program from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. You can learn more about Cooperative Extension by visiting the website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. You can also email at us at colgremg@cornell.edu. Or visit us on Facebook under Master Gardeners of Columbia and Greene Counties. You can today we're talking about garden design with Joan Satterley, a Master Gardener volunteer who specializes in garden design. So Joan, when you're designing a garden, do you recommend starting from scratch, or can you actually use garden design in an existing garden?
No, you certainly can use garden design in existing gardens. A garden, as I think I mentioned before, a garden really takes a lot of work and a lot of consideration, and therefore I would not suggest that everybody just rip out what they have, but kind of base what you have to look at, basically what you want your garden to be, which is not going to be the same as the next door person. You have to come up with, you probably have a house, a garage, maybe a tool shed as the base, and then you are going to have to work around that. Where do you want your living areas? That should be close to the house, a patio or a terrace. That should be close to the house. If it you need maybe a play area for your children, for your grandchildren, you need an area for animals. If you have any dogs, you might want a dog run, or if you have chickens or whatever, you should really plan those things in advance. But if you don't plan in advance, you can add them along. You have to think of what your house looks like from the street. That's kind of important in design, that it should set a good impression and have some privacy from the street, so people aren't looking in right into your windows. And also where you're going to have your flower garden, where you're going to have your vegetable garden, or are you going to have them both? And one thing that's people consider a lot now is lawn. Lawns are kind of passé. They're very, again, they're very English, have long views of lawns throughout your property. Most people now will try to put some simple flowers or ground covers instead of lawn, and that will reduce the maintenance.
Okay, now if you are rebuilding a garden that you've decided needs freshening. I have a garden client who has a 25-year-old formal garden, and it's very mature. A lot of these things are going to have to be changed out and put younger or fresher plants or newer. If I dig out a whole section and I'm redoing a garden, do I just dig out what's there, stir the soil up, and plop something new in? Or is that an opportunity to get in there and recondition soil? What do you do when you're remodeling a garden?
I think that what you mentioned, reconditioning the soil, is very important. And that was my biggest mistake when I started gardening, is just digging a hole and putting the plant in. So if you were completely doing a garden over again, it really is a perfect opportunity to recondition the soil. And by adding mulch, different kinds of mulches, you do have to be careful now. Should I mention the worms?
Go for it.
We have something now called jumping worms, and I cannot pronounce the Latin term for it, but they're a large worm that multiplies greatly, and they eat all of the living matter in your soil. And when I live, it's very wooded, and when I go with my garden cart or walk through the woods, there are places where we have put mulch down on paths to make paths. And these worms have eaten all of the mulch out, and it looks like coffee grounds left on top of the soil. And if I were to have a garden there, and there are worms in the garden too, but especially on these paths, if I were to plant plants there, it would be very difficult. So it is something you have to consider now, the possibility that you have these worms. And they do lay eggs. I've been looking online and asking other master gardeners when they lay their eggs, and I think it's now or a little earlier, and you will not see the egg casings, and they will hatch in the spring, and by summer you will have more worms. So it's something that you really, but to get back to your question, yes, you really should recondition your soil to the best of your ability.
And to the best of your ability, make sure that the materials you're bringing in are clean and not from
Correct.
Some neighbor or something.
Right.
Okay.
And we went to where we got the stuff for our paths and told the vendor, you know, about these worms, and he had never heard of them. And this was like a year ago, and mm-hmm. he had never heard of them. So we had some literature and brought it to him. I don't know if he was thrilled.
I need to know, yeah.
But you know, we did think he should know.
Okay. A couple of questions follow up on lawns. Now, we've pretty much in these two counties outgrown the idea of having the lawn be the main feature of our landscape. I'm seeing more people using the lawn as framing for the flowers and the trees and stuff. Are you seeing more of that?
Yes, yeah, most definitely. It's good to maybe use your lawn as a path between your flower beds. And when I lay out paths between flower beds, I drive or use the lawnmower the way the person would use the lawnmower, so that you can get the curves and straight lines in, so that you don't have to go and do things by hand afterwards. So lay out your paths, and if you are going to put a lawn on there, see how a lawnmower or a lawn tractor would go over that.
Oh, that's good. Then you got the topography
right.
result.
Right.
I have another thing that's coming along. People are getting into the habit of making, this is a new thing, meadow gardens, where they're letting the grasses grow up and incorporating wildflowers and things. And that reminded me of it because I have a meadow and I carve paths through it with my rider mower,
right,
and make that be the right lawn that's the frame, right, to the bigger plants.
Yeah. So instead of cutting the lawn every week, you cut it maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah. And you just maintain your path, your lawn path.
You maintain your path with one pass through.
And it's gorgeous.
And not have to worry about, long grass at the edge of the path.
And it does reduce maintenance big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, now we have to rephrase bring up the topic of ticks. When you're roaming around in your meadow, make sure your pants are tucked into your white socks, you have your long sleeves, you've sprayed your clothes with permethrin, and you have some sort of repellent sprayed on yourself. There, that commercial part's done. One more question on the designing. I didn't see, but I'm sure you had it in mind. The view from the street, the view from the garage, when I design, I first go inside and look out my window and say, how is this going to look so that I can enjoy it?
Right.
I don't care if the neighbors do.
Yeah.
So
that's extremely important. And it's something that is not always in my mind because, as you said, my property is very hilly and my house is way above my garden, way above the ground level. So when I look out, I just see the tops of trees and sky. So I do forget that. But when I go to and I stay at other people's houses or resorts or whatever, it is very important that when you look out that you can enjoy, because you are going to be inside most of the time. You are going to be inside of your house and you really want to be able to enjoy. So that is definitely a consideration.
And do you design for wildlife, whether it be songbirds or other types of wildlife?
More so now than I did. When I started gardening, I just thought they're there and they'll always be there. But now I am very much more conscious of birds. And when you talk about wildlife, we have wildlife like deer, and deer are a problem. I do like the birds, but even chipmunks. We have woodchucks and chipmunks and deer, and they do nibble on the plants, which I try. I don't mind that sometimes they eat the plants, but I wish they didn't quite eat as much as they do. But designing gardens around birds and pollinators and everything is extremely important now. There is, I just learned that there are over 3,000 kinds of bees in the United States, and over 300 in New York State. Most of them are not clustering bees. They don't live in hives. They live alone in little holes in the ground or holes in wood. And all of that is becoming more prevalent. People are more concerned about things like that. Which leads me, you always hear people talk about native plants. When you look at the name and when you're buying plants and you see it says Rudbeckia fulgea, that is it's the name of the plant and it's the Latin Latin part of it. But if it says Rudbeckia goldstrom fulgea, Goldstrom means that the plant has been changed. It is a cultivar. It may or may not, and I picked that name of the plant, and I'm not saying it is not a good plant. I'm just saying that you have to realize that is not the species, and it may not be as good for pollinators and other animals that you, other wildlife that you want to attract.
Well, Teresa and I have been playing with an idea of putting together a discussion of botanical Latin. And you brought up the Latin with Fulgida and stuff. Virginiana or Canadensis in the name of a plant indicates that it is native.
Right.
So starting with that, if you see that, you know you're on the right trail.
Well, if it says Canadensis, But again, if there is a name in single quotes before canadensis, after the first name, that means it's a cultivar.
Well, then it's a cultivar. And a named variety, which may or may not be as useful.
And also with what you mentioned, like Japonica or Chinensis or whatever, means it came from Japan or came from China, which gives you some indication that it might be a pretty hardy plant.
Or it might become an invasive.
A lot of garden centers now are not, I shouldn't say they're not selling invasive plants, but if you buy from a reputable buyer, the plants, even though they might have been imported, will have been planted in their beds or beds that they know of for an extended period of time, and they have found that they are not invasive. But you really have to be careful when you go to some places. It breaks my heart sometimes, and I want to say, when people are online and they're buying plants that I definitely know are not going to make it, you know, through a winter here, and I see people buying them. I never really quite understand why people always, after daffodil season, the potted daffodils in big box stores where they're all dead. Now, you can reuse those bulbs, but the chances of these people getting these bulbs, you know. So you really should know, you know, before you go, what it is you want.
Unless you're a cheapskate and you know that if you buy the dead daffodils and plant them, you got them the next
year. Yeah, you do. But that might not work. But yeah.
So it's critical to pick your plants, you know, not just do the design, but pick your plants within the design. So if you have a lot of deer and woodchucks and chipmunks, to know what they don't eat, in order to make sure that when you end up planting and subscribing.
Correct. And that is... You can, Cornell Cooperative Extension will have lists of different types of shrubs, different types of plants that are good for, you know, all conditions. There are limited numbers of plants that I have found that are deer-proof. Nothing is deer-proof. If deer, people will say, put soap, do this, do that. It works if they are not hungry. If they are hungry, they are hungry and they will eat.
So you haven't designed a lot of hosta gardens?
No, I have not designed hosta gardens.
We know hosta as deer candy, for yes, those who are not familiar with the
yes
issue.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about hosta, hosta is a nice plant, and to plant hostas and ferns together, you have the two different kinds of foliage, really make a nice show, and they last for a long time. And it has to do with, well, you know, with texture and color, and you don't have to worry about, you know, the blossoms, you know, fading or whatever. And that really bothers me that I can't plant hostas and ferns.
But without fencing.
But you can plant ferns. You can plant ferns.
Ferns are safe. Okay, I had a client who was colorblind, but who also adored fragrances. So have you ever had issues like that where someone has particular shortcomings sensory-wise?
Yeah. No, not really. And I've just recently been thinking about the various things that you should incorporate in your garden. And one of them is a fragrance. And a lot of things, when things have been hybridized, the smell has, you know, people always talk about how roses used to smell so nice. And a lot of roses now do not. So, I have not worked with any problems like that. That sounds like another problem to add to the many problems in gardening.
Well, the answer is blue.
Blue.
If you have a colorblind client, don't bother with red.
Okay.
Blue and yellow are fine.
Okay.
But they're not going to be able to tell a poppy from a leaf next to it from a distance.
Okay.
It's very challenging. But the scent things, if you can do a garden focusing on scents, is magic.
Oh, okay.
You know how lilacs, the scents will come around the corner of a house and grab you?
Right,
just
right.
Just like a river of, I was of just gonna, aroma.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
So, along with that, the smell, also movement in garden. And if you are colorblind or even have difficulty with vision. The grasses are nice now, or leaves in trees when they have some movement and make some sound in your garden. So along with fragrance, sound is can be important also.
Thank you for listening to Digging In with Master Gardeners, a program from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, with offices in Hudson in Columbia County and Acre in Greene County. You can learn more about the Cooperative Extension by visiting the website on ccecolumbiagreen.org, and there you'll also find information about deer-resistant plants as well as groundhog-resistant plants. If you have a gardening question or would like to suggest a topic for a future radio show, you can email us at colgremg@cornell.edu. Today's topic is garden design, and we're joined by Joan Satterley, a master gardener with over 22 years of experience, so she has a wealth of experience to share. So let's dig right back in. Joan, landscaping is typically defined as the creation of an outdoor environment that harmonizes with nature, architecture, and its surroundings. So what are additional considerations that go into the creation of garden design? I'm thinking perhaps hardscape might be one that people should really seriously think about.
If by hardscape, do you mean things like patios or terraces or whatever? Yes. And probably living areas like a terrace or a patio should be close to your home so you can leave your living room and get right onto your terrace. Also, paths are important. In the winter, it is a good time to look at your grounds and decide where you want to incorporate some hardscaping.
Well, that kind of ties in with your lawnmower topographical assessment. So, that's a very good idea because you're looking at it covered with white and you've got a clear vision.
Yeah. One thing that I find very important, and this is because of my advancing age, I find seeding in a garden very important. And I think a garden is the way I look at a garden, it's not just something that you look at, but it's something that you walk through, that you move through, that you enjoy, up close. So I like to have paths, and I like to have benches where they're looking out onto your garden or back up at your house, where you're always in your house looking out, but it's nice sometimes to look up at your house. At our garden this year, my husband, who does most of the hard work, one of my neighbor's little children gave me a gnome for my garden. A gnome is not on the top of my list of little things to have, but it is a kind of cute gnome. And my husband cut into the hillside and built a flat ledge and put a bench there and put the gnome there. Then I had the little girl come, and I was going to surprise her. And she said, yeah, I saw it already. when she walked past the house, she had seen it. And I was thinking, oh, she would be so excited.
Kids are so cute.
Yeah, they are. They are.
But the hardscape, I think, adds a lot of interest to a garden.
It does.
Character.
One of the things, I don't know if you consider it hardscape, but I have gotten water features. And they have really a lot of things that don't look like, I shouldn't, you know,
I'll
like,
say it.
Like, you know, like Christmas tree shop blew up in your yard. I have one. It's just a little fountain. It's like a column. And I bought a bowl, a wide open kind of bowl, and painted them. There's some kind of a spray paint that comes with sand in it. And, you know, a dark color, painted them both that same color. You put the fountain part in the bowl part, and it's, you know, it sits on my deck. And it's really nice to have a little water feature like that. Also, it's kind of fun to have another hardscaping feature. I don't know if it's hardscaping, but it's an accessory to your garden, is a big bowl of water, and you buy fish. And then you get a game camera, and you plant it, you tie it to a tree, and then you watch when the raccoon comes. And a game camera is kind of fun to have in your garden. I have this is not garden design, but I've watched a bear shake a trash can, you know, to get the bird, the winter bird seed and everything. So a game camera is something that can really add depth to your garden because you see what's happening at night when you are not, when you were asleep. Does that cover your question? That wasn't a lot about hand.
Well, that was
hardscaping.
But it does bring up the problem of, or question of, time. Now you've got your game camera timing the bears and the raccoons from the raids and things going on, but sequence of bloom, you're controlling time over 9 months.
Right. I am always happy if I have things bloom. And I haven't really, I know people who have more time to spend than I do on a garden or more money to spend than I do can get things that bloom. Again, it's your research before you buy the plant and before you plant it, you know, so that you know exactly when it is supposed to bloom. But things are changed depending so much on the weather that we have no control over. I'm waiting now for some monkshood to bloom, and it's not bloomed yet.
It never hurries.
Yeah. And I'm just glad when something is blooming. I know that doesn't answer you.
It does. And another thing that you had mentioned in some of the lead up to this, when we were doing some research, was a borrowed view. Yes. I love the concept. Could you explain that?
A borrowed view, and not everybody has the possibility for this. But I was to a garden that was approaching the Taconic Parkway coming from Catskill, and it was up on a hill, and it looked at both the Berkshires or the Taconic Mountains back at the Catskill Mountains, and they had some enclosures in their garden, and like shrubbery, and you could look between, some of it was left open, and you could actually see some of the mountains in the distance. They also had one little gazebo kind of room, and it had a round window. They cut the lattice so it was round, and you could look out, and you could see the Catskill Mountains were perfectly framed in this round view, and it was really, really nice. Not everyone has that opportunity, but many times you have a neighbor that you want to there is something, their garage, their sheds or something, and you want to cut off their view, so you will put up a line of shrubbery or trees. Very often you can put a gap somewhere in that line where you are looking at some nice part of your neighbor's lawn or something like that. Also, if you do a line of things because you are trying to hide something that you do not want to see, if you have a line of 100 is a little excessive. If you have a line of 10 arborvitae, that your eye is going to go to that because that's a big mass of planting. So what you should do is put something different in there, maybe a bird feeder instead of one of the plants, or a big pot with some flowers in it. Your eye will then be brought to that one focal point, but it won't really emphasize the whole line of the same kind of plant.
Well, that brings us to the whole topic of texture. Mm-hmm. Because as you described that line of arborvitae, you kind of need something to balance that out. So what do I need to think about when I want to add texture?
If you want to add, again, in selecting your plants, you have to look at the texture. As I said before, the ferns and the hosta are good. If I had a line of shrubs and they had one texture to them, I would try to add something, and maybe not just some with arborvitae. They're I don't know of another texture, but I might want to do something like a tree with a distinctive bark, you know, a deciduous tree along with the evergreens, you know, a clump of river birch or something like that to change the solid green wall.
So with looking with texture to vary, say, grasses with, say, the round leaf of a rose with a spike of an iris with...
Right, yes, yeah.
Do you have favorite combinations?
No, that's when I mentioned all the different kinds of plants that you can use, like ferns and mosses and grasses. And tropicals. Tropicals are a thing that people have been using more lately. And that definitely does add, some texture to thing to a garden. And vines. Something, when you look at a garden, you should look at it as a floor, a wall, and a ceiling, just like in your house. And you should plant up with walls or vines. I don't know if that's not exactly texture, but it does add interest to the garden.
So talking about tropicals, it makes me think that design doesn't need to be permanent. Now, we know that it's always going to be changing because these plants are growing and changing shape all the time. But for something like tropicals where you want a splash of color, there's no reason you can't put them in temporarily,
right,
in containers, or just plant bulbs and take them out at the end of the season. So you're not really locked into something that you can plant in the ground and have to maintain forever.
No, and it's kind of fun, I think, to change things over time. And when I plant tropicals now, I usually plant them in pots, and then I bring them in the winter. That way they, I can use them over again. But you can plant them in the garden. If you go down to Athens, there are a couple there who take care of the plantings there, and they're in huge, huge pots. And they have cannas, which have a very distinctive leaf. Not only is the leaf, it's a tropical plant, a tropical corm bulb. I don't know.
Might be a corm. Corm,
yeah. Mm. And the leaves are colorful, and the leaves are large. And there are very few flowers in that, but there are vines, the sweet potato vine, which can be bright green or black, dark brown, and the other leaves. And there's a lot of things going on there. And it is just a summer planting. He saves the bulbs and the corms and uses them over again the following year.
And they are gorgeous.
And they are really nice.
Just
they're really
gorgeous.
People
yeah.
speak about that garden all the time.
So that's something that you could use to amplify your hardscapes, like patios and things. But
right.
Put a big tub or pot of some
right.
color.
Exactly.
But no goldfish.
Well, the goldfish are kind of fun to buy. They only cost $1 each. But the last goldfish, we overwintered them in our basement in their pot.
Yeah.
And they got thinner and thinner and thinner. And finally they went outside and they got eaten. So, but that's a garden. It's always living and moving and changing.
There you go, and it's a temporary garden.
And you never know. You never know what's going to happen, what's going to live and what's not.
Well, what's great about garden design is that you can apply the same basic principles to a project as large or as small as you want, whether it be a window box on your deck or to your veggie garden, as well as obviously to your flower gardens. Are there some good examples of garden design that our listeners could visit locally to get ideas that they might apply to their own landscapes?
Okay, there's one thing that I really like. Have you ladies heard of the Garden Conservancy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Columbia County has very active.
Yeah. The Garden Conservancy started and I don't know all the particulars, so I might not be addressing this correctly, but the Garden Conservancy started somewhere in the southern part of New York State, Westchester County maybe. There was a garden that was well tended and a beautiful garden for many, many years. And the woman who took care of the garden, whose garden it was, passed away. And people in the area thought this garden should not be let go. And so they started having open houses locally, and they would collect money for these open houses and then use them to preserve already existing gardens that could not be maintained by their owners anymore. And throughout the whole United States now, they have these gardens are open. Some of my family lives away, and very often I plan my trips around when a garden will be open. These are private gardens. They are open maybe 1 or 2 days a year. It's not something you can attend all the time. But there are a number of gardens in Columbia County and close by in Connecticut and Massachusetts. I'm afraid there aren't too many that I know of in Greene County. But in Columbia County, Ulster County, there are. They are the most enjoyable that I find because most of them are maintained by the owners, which is what I like to look at. Longwood Garden in Philadelphia is, you know, the wonderful, wonderful garden. But, I mean, it's acres and acres and many, 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 many caretakers on many levels.
Like
and,
Versailles.
Like Versailles, right? So, you know, so even though I enjoy going to some place like Versailles, I really do enjoy these local gardens. You can just look up Garden Conservancy online, and you can find the information right online, or you can buy the book that has all of the things listed in them.
Teresa, you're going to be putting a link on our website for that, right?
We'll do our best.
Yeah.
Other gardens that I like, one of my favorite gardens that you can get to fairly easily is Wave Hill in the Bronx. Again, it is a very natural, it's a large garden, and it's overlooking the Hudson River and the Palisades. But it is a garden that is that you can get ideas for your garden if your garden is not like Versailles. But the Berkshire Botanical Garden is a wonderful local garden that only takes about an hour to get to. And that has different areas. People very often say, oh, I've been to the Berkshire Botanical Garden. Oh, I've been to the New York Botanical Garden. You know, it doesn't hurt to look at the same plant twice. And also, you can go in spring, summer, fall, and maybe even winter. And it is different at all times. Your garden should be a living thing that you can enjoy throughout the whole year. My very favorite garden, which is difficult to, I mean, it's not difficult to get to, is Chanticleer. I think that means that is just one of my favorite gardens.
Anyone who's been to Chanticleer is in love.
Yeah.
It's magic.
I really enjoy that. And around here, there are a garden down in near Millbrook called Innisfree. And it's supposed to be, it is a distinctive garden because they call it a teacup garden. I think they made up the name after they built the garden. But somewhat difficult for me to walk around. I have to go down a steep slope. And then the garden is a number of acres in sort of a bowl. And it has lakes and rocks and lots of flowers. But that is, again, a distinctive garden here.
Now, with Innisfree, they advertise it as being beautiful from any prospect in the garden, whatever view you look at, okay. It's supposed to be perfection.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that, but yeah. I know it's it is a lovely garden. And if you go to Innisfree, I don't know, I usually can only do one garden a day, but there's another one called Wethersfield. And it was, it is near Millbrook. It might not be in Millbrook, but it is near Millbrook. And a banker from New York City owned this large property. It is still a working farm. Again, it is on a high hill, and it overlooks both the Taconics and the Catskills. And it is a formal garden. It is an Italian garden. There is a house, and there is also a carriage house there. And he used to come up from the city and have his horses mounted to the carriage and ride around his garden. It's quite lovely, but it is a formal garden, not a whole lot of flowers. There is a flower garden outside of the living room area of the house. Many of the gardens that you look like Innisfree and Wethersfield and the Garden Conservancy, they are not open all the time, and you really have to look up these things before you set out on your journey to go to them. But there are a lot of places to go, a lot of enjoyable places.
Now, I know you've traveled considerably. Other than France, where are your favorite gardens?
It's really interesting because I know more than many people around here and less than a lot of people. But when I go to someplace else, California or Florida, I'm going like, what is that? You know, gardens are very, to me, they're very different. You know, when you are in the desert or when you are in California and when you are in Florida, it's just enjoyable to go and to look at these different gardens. It surprises me that in California, I guess because people are so covered with nature or enveloped in nature, there really don't seem to be a lot of gardens, you know, formal gardens to visit in California. There were, we went to gardens, again, with Garden Conservancy. I've gone to some of these local private gardens, and there was one in Texas that I really liked. There are gardens and there are just woodlands and everything to look at no matter where you go.
So Joan, it's been a pleasure having you with us today. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and expertise. I'd also like to thank WGXC 90.7 Radio for hosting this program, as well as production support from Donna Peterson and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this edition of Digging In with Master Gardeners, a program of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. You can learn more about Cornell Cooperative Extension by checking out our website at ccecolumbiagreene.org. You can contact us by emailing us at colgremg@cornell.edu or in Facebook under Master Gardeners of Columbia and Greene Counties. Master Gardeners are typically available on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays in the Hudson office or on Tuesday and Thursday mornings in the Acre office. We look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, inch by inch, row by row, let us help your garden grow.
You can contact Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties with questions at ccecolumbiagreene.org, visit us in Hudson or in Acre, or ask us questions on the Master Gardeners of CCE Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook group. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal program and employment opportunities. Someone warm them from below.